This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. The music playing while I'm talking to you is Claude Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. It features JMU faculty members Beth Chandler, flute, Janice Minor, clarinet, and Eric Ruppel, piano. And it was recorded in the relatively new Forbes Center for the Performing Arts at James Madison University. A while ago, I had the bright idea to record classical music in the WMRA talk show studio. This, Matt Bingay quickly told me, was actually a really bad idea, which led me to contact Stanton's Thomas Carr, who's had 37 years' experience engineering and recording sound. A lot of it spent at San Francisco's famed Sound Annex. Over the course of his long career, Tom Carr worked on movies and with some really famous classical, rock, jazz, reggae, and soul musicians. Tom came to Harrisonburg a couple of years ago to be the recording engineer sound designer for the Forbes Center for the Performing Arts. I got to talking with Tom Carr about his new professional digs.
My wonderful little piece of the 100-acre wood. It's just, so cool. Well, first off, you can't talk about the Forbes Center without talking about these incredible acoustic spaces, specifically the concert hall, the recital hall, and the main stage theater. The thing that's cool about them, but in particular the concert hall and the recital hall, you know, we're now in our third season. And even now, it's breathtaking to me as an engineer and just a guy. And a lover of sound, and then just me really wanting to hear the music for the music, to go in those halls and just sit in there by myself. And the air conditioning is utterly silent. I used to do sessions up at the scoring stage at Lucasfilm, up at Skywalker Ranch. That's a pretty quiet room, even with it being seating for 120, and this huge, huge room. It's not entirely silent. And some of the best-built recording studios I've ever worked in were never achieved the level of silence that has been achieved in these Forbes halls. Russ Cooper, who is the acoustician for those rooms, you know, he's in there with this handheld, incredibly sophisticated, very pricey piece of test gear, and it can't read the noise floor because it's not, there's nothing there. So right away, we're way ahead of the curve, because when there's a break in the music, there's actually a break in the music. It's not like there's a break in the music and then you hear the low roar of the air handlers. None of that.
And that's not competing with the music.
Right. It's not competing. And so if there's a performance and in the score, it's triple piano is the dynamic marking, we can hear that with no interference. And it's such a revelation to be able to work in those circumstances. So that's on our side. Then I can go in and attend a rehearsal, work with the conductor or the ensemble director, talk about the program that they're going to do, and I can adjust the room acoustics to optimize how much room reverb that naturally occurs in this, because these are big spaces, right? I can adjust the reverb time in the room to the ensemble and the program that they're performing. Is that insane?
Yeah.
So
it's magic.
It is magic. So right away, that translates to a couple things. Every time Dr. Robert McCashin comes in with the symphony for the rehearsal, we can start at their default symphony setting. In we've got, you know, this chart, and the numbers can be dialed up, and then so every time they start off with the room sounding the same way for the symphony.
Now you're doing this. The sound of the symphony is mic'd.
No. This is just happening in the room.
This is just the room.
Yeah, I'm just talking about.
How do you do that?
Well, there's a system. I mean, they're called travelers and banners. That's what they're called. But basically, it's in the concert hall. There's a pair of Well, gosh, let's see. There's one, two, three sets of really large curtains that are on motor drives, so I can cover or uncover reflective space. And then up in the catwalks, there's five pairs of vertical banners, which are also very heavy acoustic drapery. And so we can lower those or take them up. And so I can give the room not much reverb, or I can open it up completely, say for the a cappella group from Great Britain, Tenebrae, when they were in the hall, we stored everything, which would be the term where everything is taken out, and the reverb, natural reverb time in the concert hall is about 4 seconds.
Wow.
And so we can dial it down, you know, kind of everything from about a second and a half to 4 seconds. So that's the range that we can do. It's a similar thing in the recital hall, not to that scale because it's only 200 seats.
It's a smaller room.
Yeah, and the concert hall is 600. So we're starting off with acoustic spaces that are just really kind of as good as you can get anywhere. So then... Then we've got in the concert hall as of last summer up to, well, we completed about December at the end of last year. We now have this really sophisticated hanging microphone system in the concert hall that allows me to raise and lower microphones that are placed in various places above the stage, out in the house, and up in the choral balcony, which is above and behind the stage, basically. For anyone who's not been in the concert hall, it's 360-degree seating if every seat is sold. So that is run via remote control from my room that is one floor down in the Forbes Center. So the associated gear is up in the catwalk that allows me, with my iPad, to walk out on the stage and talk to the motor control computer system that will raise or lower the microphone so I can adjust the microphones.
Your thumbs are going as you're talking to your imaginary iPad.
So I've got my iPad. And so I can adjust the microphones depending on the ensemble and how big it is and what they're doing. And all its associated gear is up in the catwalk. And then all that digital audio, which is converted analog to digital up in the catwalk, comes down a pair of Ethernet lines down to my room. It split out again, and it was mind-blowing to me when the steer showed up, and I'm going, tell me this again? And they said, oh, okay, well, we've got this box up here, and it takes all those microphone signals and collapses it down, sticks it on a couple of Ethernet lines, and then at the other end, there's another box just like it, and it splits it out and dumps it digitally into your recording system. Okay, show me. And it's incredible. We haven't done it yet, but I can do up to 40 channels in record with this system.
Wow.
We're starting to edge a little closer on some things, which is pretty great.
On what? What's the...
Oh, it'll be something bigger ensemble where you've got a lot of stuff on stage, the hanging microphones, direct line coming from the live sound console at the front of house, in the house, that's mixing the house sound, and special microphones that are actually on the stage for soloists. It, you know, it really kind of piles up pretty quickly.
And what are you doing with all those channels?
At that point, for those recordings, the goal is get the right microphone in the right place.
And get the recording.
Get the recording. And then there's X number of hours of post-production editing and mixing time for every recording. I basically do all the post-production on all this stuff. But I'm projecting that me and my student crew will have done 165 concert recordings and mixes by the time the season ends in April.
And will you have had fun?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just, yeah, this is, yeah, it's a kick because I've got this great system and I've got the really good studio grade monitors in my room and it's fantastic.
All right, I have a question. When you are editing a performance, is your loyalty to how the performance sounded live sitting in the theater, or are you trying for the best sounding recording?
Both. It's both. So there are a couple of considerations. One is, because we have these incredible spaces, I want these finished recordings that come over here to Tom Duvall, go to the School of Music Library, and the guest artists and, you know, student soloists and the conductors and all of that, right? When they listen to these mixes, I want them to feel as if they listen to it and go, man, we are so lucky to have that recital hall. We are so lucky to have that concert hall, main stage, whatever, you know, whatever venue it happens to be. I want them to put it on and go, man, that sounds good. That's really good. But additionally, because I'm micing it up in such a way where I've got control after the fact to make sure that the featured vocalist, clarinetist, pianist, harpist, whoever it happens to be, they're in the house unamplified. And so I'm sure that if everyone's done their job acoustically, the audience is enjoying a very good balance between featured performer and the ensemble. That's all fine. For me, I'm nudging it towards what would be considered a studio sensibility so that they listen to it. And it may be that with adjusting their placement in the stereo field, so where they are, sort of, are they in the middle of the left and right? Or have we sort of nudged them out and we placed them somewhere?
You can do that electronically.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, I have an electronic version of the board that's sitting in front of me. Just happens to sit on the screen, but functionally it's the same.
Studio sensibility is what
Yeah. So with that in mind, I'm capturing the sound of the hall and the ensemble and whatever it happens to be, but I want the experience of the listener who's now hearing the CD to have something a little hyper-real. I want them to feel as if the performance really is for them. And so everything it's sort of audio powder and rouge. That's what it is. It's date night and everybody looks great because I want people to be able to revisit these recordings again and again and hear something new and maybe experience it in a slightly different way, but primarily to be able to come back and say, man, we are all on it that night. Everything is as it should be, and listen to what's going on. And if we were all fortunate enough that there was where lightning struck and there was this goosebump moment in the performance when that happened, and it's palpable in the recording, every time someone drops that CD in and they get to that point, I want them to experience that goosebump moment. And so if I need to give it a little tweak, or it's just, you know, oh, gee, you know, they really should have crescendoed here just a teens more, I might.
Do it for them.
I might give a little adjust and just make it a little more drama. I don't do it often. I'm very conservative, but as a listener, and if I think that there's something that we can do, that I can do, that will be invisible from a mix standpoint, that will suggest that, oh, okay, this is really good, then I'll go for it.
Tom Carr also did the on-location recording for the Heifetz International Music Institute during its first Stanton summer. And in his spare time, he's hard at work recording, engineering, and creating music in his Stanton home production studio.
Something I'm working on right now. There's a great old friend of mine. His name is Willie Claflin, and he's a wonderful singer-songwriter. He's a 1960s Harvard grad, taught kind of alternative school for a long time, and now he's one of this country's preeminent storytellers. So he's routinely in front of thousands of people, you know, the National Festival down in Jonesboro, Tennessee. And I have done all of Willie's albums, including two music albums only. And I'm actually working on a third one right now. He came out to my house in Stanton this summer, which has turned out to be a great recording space. So we cut about 24 songs of things we didn't even have archives of his original stuff, a whole new batch of stuff. And so right now I'm just on my fringe time around all the other responsibilities.
What's that?
Yeah,
fringe
right.
Time.
So this is very, very much it's singer-songwriter stuff. It's great storylines. And so I'm on this stuff. So the first one I've gotten done, I tracked bass, acoustic rhythm. I cut an electric lead part, which I've never done before, but I'm actually very happy with. And I layered up and I sung all the backing harmony vocals.
For better or worse, from this day forth ever after, in sickness and health, through all of the tears and the laughter, for richer or poorer, till death do us part, I give you my love to have and to hold in your heart. I give you my love to have and to hold in your heart.
You'll find relevant photographs and links, including one to Tom Carr Audio, on the Spark page at WMRA.org.